It's the history of football we knows about, and we want to expand what we know. We'll become such intelligent gentry with every kick to kick show. Beginning in the time 1870s, right through to the modern day. Tune in for Timmy Coops and the Kazman to hear what they all have to say.
Welcome to another episode of the Kick to Kick podcast.
Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Kaz. This is also Charlie's over there.
Hi, guys.
Charlie's here too.
I was just looking at you.
We are here today for a special episode talking about the Footscray Football Club, or as we know them now, the Western Bulldogs.
Yeah, our second special episode.
Yes, of the three new teams that enter in 1925. So as a way to introduce the clubs, we've gone and spoken to the historians, as you'll hear, to give us a bit of a background history about where these teams have come from.
Yeah, I have to say, because we've been talking about everything that's happened to our original eight and then 10 and then nine.
Yep.
For the last, you know, what,
year
23, well, yeah, year and a bit in real time, but 23, 24 years.
Episodes.
Yeah, 24 episodes. So now we need to backfill and hear a bit about these clubs that were just hanging around, buzzing around on the side, waiting for their chance.
Waiting for their chance for the big league.
So big time.
And they're taking their chance.
In preparation for this, we spoke last episode about what kind of happened between 1914 and 1924. This is the actual process that happened then in deciding the clubs. So there was an ordinary meeting of the VFL on the 11th of June 1924, and there, on a motion of Bud Copeland and seconded by Hunt of Carlton, the league considered admitting a new club at the next meeting.
So Bud Copeland at this stage was...
He's like, let's Collingwood's representative. And Hunt was Carlton.
And if we remember correctly, at the end of the previous year, hadn't Bud Copeland...
He'd been ousted from the Collingwood... I think as secretary of Collingwood, but he was still the representative of Collingwood.
Yeah, because of the decision he made at the carnival.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they had this. They had another meeting and no decision until it came about. In August, Brunswick City Council wrote a letter seeking admittance for the Brunswick football team. Nothing came of that. They were denied. In September... what generally happens when all these things are decided? They form a subcommittee.
Yes, love a good subcommittee.
To examine the possibility of a new club entering the league. The committee decided that if a decision was made to admit a new club, that it be discussed with the VFA, but also that should the VFA itself admit a new club, then the transfer agreement between the two leagues then becomes null and void. And that's really an important part of this story.
Yes, it certainly is. So the transfer agreement that we... have been dealing with these past few years that both clubs need to sign off for a player to change between the two leagues.
Yes, because there was issues with the junior club, players going to the junior clubs that then come into the senior clubs. So they had an agreement in place. But Friday, January 9th at 8 p.m, the committee met again to produce a final resolution on this new team agenda. Dr. McClellan of Melbourne suggested Footscray.
Big Bill.
As many people wanted Footscray, they deserved to be in the league. Now, because the VFA had admitted Coburg in late December, the agreement for transfers was now null and void. And that meant that the VFL kind of knew they could take all the clubs, like that transfer window was closed and they could take the clubs across from the VFA to the VFL.
So they knew that Coburg was going to come in, so they sort of grandfathered that rule in, knowing that that would allow them the freedom to steal the clubs that they wanted.
Yeah, basically. So the VFA had a meeting with the media present where they're like, all right, we'll admit Coburg into the league.
Yeah.
And the VFA had their meetings behind closed doors, so no one knew what was going on there.
Yeah.
And they had this plan all along that they've got Coburg, so we can kind of do what we want now. And then the motion was put forward to, instead of invite one team, invite three teams to make the league 12.
Do we know who put forward that motion?
I do not. It'd be good if we could read the minutes like Jared Dowling was talking
about. Someone... we spoke to did mention it.
Jared Dowling was talking about
he
actually got to read the actual minutes.
That's right. Yeah,
we'll keep at it and bring that in another episode.
When
we get the chance
to. So Footscray, Hawthorn, and Perran were the clubs that were put forward, as we've discussed. At this meeting, all the delegates then had to adjourn to Cobb's Cafe in Bourke Street. They had some fish and chips, if you were wondering.
Delightful.
And supposedly here, the Geelong delegate liked the idea of North over Perran, as it required less travel for his team. So they went back and continued their meeting. It went into the wee hours of the morning. And the following morning, the decision was made on a vote of 14-3 to admit Hawthorn, North and Footscray. So North Melbourne coming in instead of Paran.
Instead of Paran.
Yep.
As we mentioned last time, that yeah, because of Geelong and also because of the Melbourne recruitment system as well. Yeah.
The provisos were that Essendon maintained the Flemington and Kensington districts of the Hopetoun Ward. And John Wren's proposal of Carnival's limited ground was deferred, and as we talked about last episode, the VFA ended up getting control of that ground. And then the admittance of those three teams was ratified at a full meeting of the league a week later, and all clubs agreed to the VFL's terms and were now officially part of the VFL.
Amazing.
Just amazing. So
we're back to no buys, guys.
We're back to no buys. What we'll talk about in the next episode is just the fallout with the VFA and how they reacted to this, because that's quite interesting also.
But for now, let's speak to
about Darren Arthur.
Yeah, so
who is the Footscray historian.
Yeah, so Tim went out to Western Oval.
Yes,
and had a chat to him. Unfortunately, neither Kaz or I could be there that time. I'm very disappointed about it.
Yes. Funny thing about this audio as well. So I got a dictaphone specifically for this to record stuff on the road, because we are now a traveling podcast show.
If we need to be.
But I still didn't know how to use the equipment properly, so I had it down really, really low. So the recording is not the best because we've had to absolutely crank the gain, haven't we, Kaz?
Yeah, we cranked it. You can hear it.
Right? You can hear it all.
We apologise for some.
It's not as crisp as the Hawthorn or the North Melbourne episodes.
Yes, this was the first interview that was done.
Yes.
Since then, we've figured it out.
We have figured it out. But
very interesting either way, though.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
So let's have a listen to Darren Arthur and his history of the Footscray Football Club and Footscray area.
I'm here with Darren Arthur, who, what's your official title?
Club historian.
Club historian of the Western Bulldogs, previously the Footscray Bulldogs, here to talk about the Bulldogs' time, their formation and their time in the VFA. So the first thing to ask Darren really is, when was the team formed?
Well, the myth has it that the team was formed in 1883. However, I've never really believed that myself. I'm actually doing a thesis on the origins of the club and sport in Footscray at the time. But from what I can gather, there was definitely a Footscray football team from 1876.
Yep.
Now, whether that's the same team that went through to 1883 is up for conjecture. And unfortunately, there's no Footscray newspapers, Williamstown newspapers, council records are missing.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to piece together. But what we know for fact is that Footscray Football Club evolved out of the Prince Imperial Football Club. They virtually changed their name. So Prince Imperial Football Club came about in 1880.
Yep.
And for two seasons played under that name.
And that was named after the prince who died in the Zulu Wars?
That's correct.
Yeah. So as a tribute to him.
Yeah, so the news hit Australia about June, July, not 1879.
Yep.
So next season, 1880, they've shown their respect for him and the British Lynx, and renamed, well, we think renamed the team Prince Imperial.
Yeah.
So in 1882, the team's renamed itself Footscray.
Yep.
But 1883... a couple of things went on in that year, and I don't really know why that is considered as the formation year, but there's certainly a lot of certainly the local paper started in 1883. There was a Best and Fairest Trophy, if you like,
that far back,
was awarded. I wasn't regarded as the Best and Fairest, but best all-round player sort of thing. There was a membership ticket inaugurated 1883, so there's a lot of circumstantial evidence.
Compelling evidence to suggest 83 was the formation year, but no, you're right, there's evidence of them being there beforehand. Who were the major players in like the formation of the club in those early days?
So that when you read about the formation, it's always linked to one particular guy who seemed to arrange. He was heavily involved in cricket and football, and that was Charlie Lovett. And 1935, the Footscray Mail wrote an article. Well, he wrote a number of articles based on his memory of his time in Footscray, and involved the football club, the cricket club, and other cultural societies.
keep going.
So out of that, one of the things he did say was that Prince Imperial was renamed, or the Footscray Football Club was renamed the Prince Imperial Football Club. So that suggests that there was a continuation between the team that started in 1876 to that 1880 Prince Imperial sign.
Yeah.
So we have his memoirs. So I think that casts some doubt as to the 1883 myth.
Yep. And it should be said, like, Footscray at this time as a suburb was separate from Melbourne as well, wasn't it? It wasn't
just
a continuation of the suburbs. It was almost a separate town.
Yeah, so virtually nowadays we consider it like an inner suburb.
Yeah.
But then it was virtually an outer suburb, outcast, virtually. Between Footscray and the city, you had the Saltwater River, which is now the Maribyrnong River, and you had a large swamp called Batman Swamp, and no one could pass it.
Yeah.
There was no road as such, direct road from Footscray through to the city.
Okay.
You had to go virtually around Essendon, Flemington, Essendon,
yep,
to get to the city.
Yep.
And that remained that way for the whole of the 1800s and early 1900s. So.
Yeah.
So they were virtually like like an island, basically, separate from the rest of Melbourne.
Yeah. And so as the population kind of went west, football came west as well.
Yeah, so I think when I look at it and compare it to Williamstown, Williamstown was sort of settled earlier, had double the population of Footscray. Footscray settled, became a municipality in 1859. So I think they were slow. They had a large area, Footscray, so it was hard. A lot of the money was council had to spend into roads and town halls and things like that sort of thing, building infrastructure. So I think the sporting side of things was a bit slow to develop. Plus it was hard to get to Footscray.
Okay.
And to get out of Footscray.
Yeah.
So I think that the footy club and that sort of thing came later.
Yeah.
As we saw in the mid 70s.
Yeah. So whereabouts did they play their first games? Was it here at Whit Noble, or was it?
So the Whit Noble was set aside as a botanical gardens around about 1860.
Yeah.
And it was virtually farmland at this time. So Footscray was settled down between Footscray Station and the river. That was the first township. So the first sort of sporting contests were played alongside the Maribyrnong River.
Yep.
Just the bottom of where Napier Street
now
stands, and that bridge.
Yep.
So just to the right there. So so they were they virtually played there till about 1880, then they, as the population grew and moved westwards.
Okay.
Then the team, they actually played before Whit Noble, they played on a site in Barclay Street, about a kilometre down the road from Whit Noble. And virtually when we entered the VFA, we acquired this ground permanently.
Yeah. So when the club first entered the VFA, it was as a junior team?
Yeah, so there was an attempt to establish an association of junior clubs, like the VFA had established the VFA in 1877.
Yeah.
How do you administer all these junior clubs that are floating around Melbourne? So they tried to establish a junior competition or association. Late 1870s, early 1880s, they started one or two times. They couldn't quite kick it off the ground until 1883, which is another thing. And Footscray was one of the first clubs in that junior association.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a junior division to the senior competition.
Okay.
So that's where Footscray were recruited from, basically.
Cool. You tell me about Footscray Excelsior, which I found a really interesting story.
I've written about that in my thesis, actually. I think they evolved from the Footscray Juniors team.
Okay, so it was like an alternative Footscray team.
Yeah.
Right,
And they were... they certainly thought they were better than Footscray.
Yeah.
And the local papers tried to merge the two teams or suggest the merger a number of times through the 80s.
Yeah.
And each time Excelsior, you know, didn't want to do this. So they end up going their own way. They did struggle for numbers for a certain amount of years in the mid-80s. They were the Belgravia United team, renamed itself Excelsior in the 1987, I think. And they played for a couple of seasons before disbanding.
Okay. Really interesting story, though, about that rivalry between the two Footscray teams.
Yeah, I think whether they were considered more a junior side, but whether they considered themselves a better class of citizen or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah.
So there was a, and I don't know whether this is related, but there was an Excelsior movement at the time for juvenile kids.
Okay.
And it taught them how to act properly and discipline and those sort of things, and through means such as exercise and sporting activities.
That's what the club stood for, all those things.
So I think that's what they, and that's why they were named that way, I think.
Interesting. So what was Footscray known as back then? Because I've come across lots of different names.
So you're quite often referred to in other newspapers as and relates to the industry that was in the area and that sort of thing. You might see bone mill fellows, saltwater lads, and that referred to the
that marsh you talked about,
or the saltwater river,
which
is now the Maribyrnong.
Yeah. And the representatives of Stonopolis,
and that relates to the bluestone, the quarries that earmarked the area at that time. So quarrying was a big thing.
And the men from the land of the boulders.
No, that relates to the bluestone again.
Yeah. So. And then obviously the Scray, so it seems like...
That's just the play on Footscray, of course.
Yeah, and then the tricolours.
And Footscray being a team with three colours in their Guernsey, St Kilda were at the time, but certainly when we joined the VFA, we left in the VFA in 1897, and St Kilda left, we became the only team with three colours. So the tricolour nickname, if you like, stuck from then on, and that really didn't disappear to the 30s.
Yeah, and weren't the colours originally just blue and white?
Yeah, so from what I can understand, wool, there wasn't too many colours of wool in the colonial period. So a lot of teams were blue and white.
Yes.
And so from what I can gather, we were blue and white, a bit like Geelong Football Club jumper.
Yeah.
And what we think happened is the Footscray Rowing Club had red in their outfit.
Yeah, they were quite successful.
And they were very successful. They achieved worldwide fame.
Oh, worldwide?
Yeah.
Wow.
They won the richest trophy in the world, and they were working class rowers. Beating the upper class, if you like. So,
of course.
So Footscray took a lot of pride in this, and I think that's maybe the reason why red was added.
Yeah, because they added the red cap, am I right?
Yeah. So, but that could also be other teams like Geelong were blue and white as well, so maybe there had to be some sort of differentiation.
Yeah, and then because of the Footscray colours, Collingwood then had to, when they became the VFA side, they had to change their colours, didn't they?
Yeah, I believe Britannia were, about 1891, were red, white and blue, so when Collingwood entered the association in 92, I think it was, they couldn't take the red, white and blue because we already had it, so it's one thing we've got over them.
Absolutely.
But I'm sure they're pleased with their black and white colours.
Probably. So in 1886, they're officially a VFA senior side.
That's correct.
But their first few years in the VFA weren't great, were they?
No, I think they pretty much struggled. They were a junior side and struggled against those those established clubs. We were only, the Footscray area was only sort of still trying to get itself right in.
Yeah.
But you had established teams, Geelong, South Melbourne's, North Melbourne's, those sort of things. So it took a number of years before we actually came good.
Yeah, and it really wasn't until the VFL formed and, I guess, broke away and all those clubs left. that Footscray really came to the fore.
Yeah, so I think we were left with five or six clubs in 97, yeah. And the VFA went about adding junior clubs, so therefore Footscray was more a senior club, if you like. So we had quite a bit of success initially, I think third in our first season, and we had a first premiership, and that led to a three-peat, if you like.
Yeah.
So a hat-trick of premierships in 98, 99, 1900. So we then became quite a strong VFA club.
And then following that, there was a few lean years where it seemed like the club were trying to bring in lots of recruits, and that kind of upset the balance of the players.
The club seemed to, at times, they thought to solve our problems on the field when we're losing players, they're retiring or going elsewhere. We can just bring in players from outside districts. That thinking changed over a period of time, and then they would bring in the juniors and then hark back and bring in the outsiders again.
Yeah.
So it sort of ebbed and flowed.
Yeah.
As to the strategic way of recruiting.
And the balance of the team as well. It seemed to really affect the Bulldogs really early on, and that kind of took them until, 1907 or 8 to kind of get back up there.
1906, we were probably lucky to make a grand final, and grand final, they got a few injuries, and you couldn't replace your players back in those days.
Yeah,
there was no bench.
Put them in the forward line.
So, yeah, they firstly played with one or two less players.
And were they still 16 aside at this stage, or was this before 16 aside? Might have been before, actually.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the numbers, but the numbers varied in the VFA, 16, 17, 18, 20 in the early years.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they won the premiership in 1908.
Yep, and who did they beat? So Brunswick.
Brunswick, and they had a star-studded side and a couple of recruits, particularly goal kicker Jack Hutchinson from Port Melbourne and Richmond. You know, he kicked 500 or 600 goals in that era in the VFA, which is, you think about it, it's quite impressive. So, Archie Clark, Marmo, the centre-half back, he was a legend. Art Gregory and Roy Cotton, the followers, they're in the Hall of Fame.
So. Yeah, rightfully so. And then 1913 was their next premiership, which was quite an exciting win over North Melbourne.
Yeah, Art Gregory, again, the follower, kicked a goal right on the bell to win the game by 1 point.
So pretty much as the siren went.
So, and he was quite a big kick from all accounts.
Yeah.
But that was you look at the names of that team, and they were just champions on every line. And a lot of them are in the Hall of Fame, like Ching Harris, the fullback, Vic Sampson, who played in 9 grand finals.
Yeah.
Which I don't know whether that's a VFA record, but Tom Grimshaw came from South Melbourne. You had Archie Clark in the centre, and Jack Craddock was a captain.
Yeah.
Vernon Brownbury, which is probably, from me reading the history, is probably the greatest player that I can gather.
Yeah.
He could do things on the footy field that no one else could do. And you had Art Gregory and Roy Cotton as followers still. So.
Was it hard to get those players into the Hall of Fame? Was that something you had to fight for, or were they the club accepting of that?
I wrote the policy for the Hall of Fame, so I included a section that recognised the pioneers. So I wanted to recognise the whole history of the club, and that included its VFA history, which I thought was very important.
Of course,
So, fortunately or unfortunately, I was probably the only one that knew about the players in the VFA era. So,
they'd had to trust your word for it.
Yeah, so I put up a list that I gave to the committee, and we discussed each player, and they could fire questions at me. And in the end, I think we determined on 12 or 13 players and personnel.
Nice. I saw their photos are down in the cafe just as you went to the shop.
Yeah, we had them up in the old museum, and they'll be put up again. But so that was sort of like a one-off, and that was done at our inaugural Hall of Fame induction in 2010. So it's good to have them recognised.
Absolutely.
So they're covered off.
So then I guess the war comes along. How did the war affect Footscray?
Footscray saw virtually no honour in winning while the war was on. We were quite a good team prior to the war. You know, made three grand finals, 12, 13, 14. I think they curtailed the season midway through 15, went into recess for 16, 17.
Yeah.
Come back with a shortened season in 1918.
Yeah.
War was still on.
Did I read that Footscray came back in 1918 more so other clubs couldn't poach their players?
Well, they had the freedom then to go to other clubs, and so Footscray didn't want to lose those players. They felt like they had to field the team. Still, I think the gate takings and that went to the war effort. So there's honour in that, but Footscray saw no honour in actually winning the game while the war was on, and I think we only won one or two games for the year. But that changed in the following year when
peace was declared.
The peace premiership, and Footscray came back bigger and better than ever.
Yeah. Well, and then you enter your most successful period ever in the history of the club.
Yeah, so the golden years, if you like, 1919 to 1924, and you know, you look at the record, they virtually didn't lose a game.
No. So 1919 premiership against North Melbourne. And then the 1920 premiership, which was really interesting. I saw that the game was delayed because of a huge storm that swept through Melbourne. And then the grand final was played, but it ended in quite controversial circumstances.
And then
had to be replayed, I think.
Yeah, there was a number of finals in that era, which I think over 1921 as well. There was like a storm took over one of the games, and but that era, 1920-21.
Oh, they lost that grand final, sorry. They lost the replay the next week. Yeah. But had the right of challenge.
Is that 21?
21, yeah.
Yeah, so Williamstown did beat us in that 1921 grand final.
Yeah. And then two more premierships in 23-24, but at that stage, the VFL had gone down to 19 since Melbourne had come back in 1919. And, you know, they wanted to replace that team so they didn't have to have the bye, and they were always looking at expanding.
Yeah.
And Footscray seemed like the obvious choice, I mean, from an outsider looking back, being the most successful.
Yeah, but I think we were the obvious choice given our record and our four premierships in 6 years basically, and two runners up. But I think Footscray created waves amongst the VFL, and we had a president, George Sayer, here. He was rather a rich man and money talked, and he managed to secure a couple of league players. Con McCarthy, he was a legend at Collingwood.
Played a premiership captain.
As captain coach in 22, and Alex Eason, who was a star rover for Geelong. And that strengthened the side. We already had the basis of a great side anyway. But I think that put a few noses out of joint in the VFL.
Okay.
Particularly with certain clubs, and therefore Footscray a little bit on the nose, if you like. So. So I think Footscray started to get a little bit worried that they weren't the obvious choice because of this.
And was it recruiting zones as well? They were worried that Essendon and South Melbourne had some of these recruiting zones out here.
Yeah, so if you're going to introduce new clubs into the VFL at that time, how do you adjust? And a lot of work went into it, particularly by Footscray Town Clerk John Jen, whose name appears on one of our grandstands. He did a lot of work trying to readjust the boundaries, and I've seen his correspondence in the council, and how he sort of tries to appease the other clubs that aren't, he thinks aren't going to get voted for Footscray. So eventually, thankfully, we did get the nod, and not only did they bring in one team, but they brought in three teams.
Three,
and so that was probably a little bit of a shock. And so probably Footscray was a certainty after all.
Yeah.
But it was, we also played against Essendon in that 1924 Championship of Victoria game.
Yep.
The VFL had always tried to put off any sort of games between a VFA team and a VFL team because they didn't want to be embarrassed.
Yep.
But when Dame Ellie Melba suggested for the Windlass Soldiers Fund, for the war effort and all that sort of thing, and the returned soldiers, then I suppose they were pushed into a corner and had to accede to the wish.
Yeah.
And Footscray came out and beat Essendon.
Yeah.
Which was, I think,
in pretty controversial fashion, I think, as well.
And it was rumoured that maybe certain Essendon players had been got at.
Yep.
And played dead. I suppose we'll never know to this day. Now, George Sayer was involved still with the club.
Yep.
And he sent out a few bribes. There's stories of cars appearing in driveways
and
all sorts of things. But I did interview Alan Hopkins, who played in the game back in the 90s. And he assured me that they were trying.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to say one way or the other.
But then, I mean, what does it show? The VFA beat them in the end, but then the VFL get that team anyway. I mean,
but I suppose it embarrassed the VFL.
True.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you're not going to admit Footscray, who have beaten your premiers, what sort of competition are you running? Are you the best competition or not?
Yeah.
So it sort of proved, in a way, that the top VFA sides were as good as
that's a really good
VFL
point.
Sides at that time,
and deserved to be playing with them.
Yeah. So, but one thing out of the game, you know, Essendon, there was a bit of controversy in their grand final. I don't know whether they won or
that was the
victory.
They played those three games. It was like a round robin series that year.
Yeah, so there's a bit of a disillusionment in the camp, if you like. With Footscray, I went through it, and they actually trained through that period. They talked about tactics. So they were well prepared, whereas Essendon...
And they really had something to prove as well.
Yeah, had something to prove. And Essendon, you know, it was the end of season game. So maybe those things conspired against Essendon and favoured Footscray.
Yeah. And then 1925, Footscray's now in the VFL.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the VFL had a long memory. And there was a rule that you couldn't transfer between the VFL and the VFA or vice versa without getting a clearance, and if you did that, you were then banned from
3 years
for playing for 3 years.
So how did that affect Con McCarthy and Alex Eason?
So they managed to get through, but we had three other Alex Eason, Norm Ford and Jack O'Brien. So you had your centre half back, your centre half forward and your best rover, all banned from playing VFL football. So that virtually tore Footscray's team apart.
Yeah.
Another reason why we beat Essendon in 24 was the use of the flick pass.
Ah, okay.
Which was allowed by the VFA at the time, and Footscray had mastered the art of it. And come 1925, VFL said, "No, sorry, mate, we're going to ban that flick pass, and we're going to ban your three players."
Okay.
So Footscray have gone in there with virtually a skeleton team. It's virtually a new side.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. All right, Darren, well, thank you for agreeing to talk to me today. I appreciate your help and willingness to share the history of the Footscray Football Club.
Yeah, thanks very much for that.
Cool.
So, a little bit scratchy, that recording, but I think it was okay. You could hear that,
absolutely.
Couldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah. It sounded good.
Yeah,
that was good. The content was good enough to get past the scratchiness.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Very interesting guy.
Mm, absolutely. Footscray, pretty successful, coming off quite a few premierships.
Yeah.
So definitely deserving their place in the VFL and beating Essendon in that Championship for Victoria.
Absolutely.
Game.
And if you think about it, they were probably the club that really forced the VFL's hand, not forced their hand, but really made
push
it
their case.
Push their case the most, and then kind of brought North Melbourne and Hawthorn in behind them.
A little bit,
really.
Yeah.
So well done, guys.
It's really being at Footscray Witten Oval as well. They've got that big flag on display, the Championship of Victoria. It's huge, and it's on display in the club.
That's cool. That's very cool that they're still treasuring that heritage as well. Really, that very old school heritage.
That one we got off Essendon, off the VFL.
Yes.
They knew they were good enough to be there, and they got there.
They did. So I hope you enjoyed that special episode.
Yeah, another little shorty. And tune in next week for our final one with about Hawthorn and about, as Tim said before, the fallout of what happens after the three new teams are admitted. So, hooroo.
You can contact Kick to Kick by email at kicktokickpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at kicktokickpod. Or Instagram, which is at kicktokickpod as well. For our growing list of all our references, please go to kicktokick.podbean.com/p/reference-list. Thank you very much for listening.